It would not shock me if they determined that there was some kind of institutional oversight or outright, you know, directive to deflate the footballs if they do something similar. They're not taking Bill Belichick out of the Super Bowl. They're not taking Tom Brady out of the Super Bowl. They're not having their marquee event marred like that. And for, could you imagine if Tom Brady couldn't play in the Super Bowl? Because John Madden made a pretty good case yesterday for saying, look, the quarterback is where this is coming from. If this, if you told me and you didn't tell me what team it was, who's behind this? Well, it's the guy who's going to touch the ball on every play, the guy who's going to throw the ball on every play. You know, there's no wide receiver in the league that can overrule the quarterback in terms of, hey, I like to catch a less inflated football. Well, it doesn't matter. I'm the one throwing it, buddy. Yeah, you'll be lucky if it comes your way.
Sure, and that's kind of how it came across today, by the way. The Saints were docked 2 second-round picks.
2 second-round picks. That's pretty significant.
Because they had already traded away their first-round pick to the New England Patriots, who always seem to acquire draft picks. But look, that's how it kind of came across with Bill Belichick today. If everything he's saying is true, then Tom Brady has a lot of questions to answer about what's going on with the footballs.
Brady scoffed at it. By the way, you see what Richard Sherman said about Tom Brady? You know, going back to the "you mad, bro" comment. He said basically, he said, you all have this image of Brady. And I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said he's a foul-mouthed SOB is what he is. He said,
doesn't surprise me.
Do you think, well, you see him, you see the histrionics with Brady. And obviously, you know, honestly, he looks a little bit like a petulant child at times, with the screaming that he does. But I guess there are a lot of players and some quarterbacks that get in other players' faces like that. He said, look, he wasn't telling the referees, hey, great game, well officiated. Okay.
No.
You know, he's got an edge to him. That's fine. But Madden's point was it's impossible for him to believe that this is done. No ball boy is going to take this upon himself to just do it, right, without knowing that that the quarterback wants you to do it or likes that or prefers that situation. This is Brady on WEEI earlier in the week denying basically any knowledge of the situation.
You heard about this story? Do you know the story I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
Do you care to tell me if you were deflating balls?
No, I have no idea.
Did you get the sense that you were able to grip the ball better than the Colts last night? Would you care to weigh in on that?
I think I heard it all at this point. So. Oh, God.
We were trying to figure out whose job it is to take the air out of the ball.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's Bob Kraft.
Nobody's.
It's not John. It's not Jonathan Kraft. No.
No. Okay. God, it's ridiculous. God, that's the last of my worries. I don't even respond to stuff like this.
Well, you kind of did, but I get what he's saying. You kind of were in the act of responding there, but no matter if you laughed it off or not. So clearly, he thought nothing happened. By the way, one of the issues that was brought up yesterday when they announced, or Chris Mortensen reported, that 11 of the 12 Patriot balls, which had been checked before the game and were fine, somehow by halftime had 11 out of 12 had lost 2 pounds of pressure on average per square inch, which is a significant amount when you're talking about a ball that's only inflated to about 13 pounds of pressure. We know way too much about this, by the way. We should not know how many pounds of pressure.
I've been watching, you know, ESPN and NFL Network for the last 24 hours, basically, watching coverage of this thing. And every quarterback they put on the screen says, hey, when you're asking them, hey, could you tell the difference between a ball that has that air pressure and one that doesn't? And they're like, immediately, yes. You would be able to tell within a split second, like, this ball feels different than it usually does. So, look, he knew. Brady knew he was playing with balls.
Unless he always plays with them like that, and it's been something they've been doing for years, unbeknownst to Tom, which I doubt.
He knew that they were underinflated. It's just, I don't know how this whole situation is going to get played out. I'm curious.
The point being as well, though, that they checked all the Colts footballs, and they were not. They were fine. Because there was some speculation, well, the cold air could have done it. And it does cause a drop in pressure.
Well, apparently the Colts were worried about this the first time they played them in November. There were little whisperings that this kind of thing was going on. Baltimore had some concerns about it the week before in the divisional round of the playoffs. I don't know. You know, I don't know how long the Patriots have been doing it. I said from Monday when this whole thing broke, you don't get caught with something like that the first time you do it.
You're incredibly unlucky if you did.
The Patriots have probably been doing this for a while. Tom Brady has been one of the best cold weather quarterbacks of this generation. I'm starting to wonder why Tom Brady has been one of the best cold weather quarterbacks of this generation, and how many of those AFC championship games was Tom Brady playing with a deflated football and Manning was throwing a balloon in comparison. Look, I don't know. I don't know if it ever made a difference in any of those football games. We may never know, but that's the point. As great as the New England Patriots have been, they've been the most dominant dynasty in the past 15 years in professional football, maybe in professional sports. And the only argument you can make is for the Spurs to go head-to-head with them. Everything comes into question now. You can question everything they've done because it's not the first cheating scandal they've been involved in. It's the second cheating scandal they've been involved in. They've always been the team that feels like it's trying to find that edge. So if you want to question everything they've accomplished, I think it's fair to do that kind of thing when it comes to the New England Patriots and what the legacy of this team and this 15 years is eventually going
to
be.
Yeah, media day at the Super Bowl, it's pointless to ask questions of Brady and Belichick for our standpoint, because you have 1 hour, you're trying to talk to as many players or coaches as you possibly can, and all that audio of the big guys is going to be available anyway.
Yeah.
You're going to hear what they say or read about what they say. But part of me wants to just be that guy in the crowd who shouts out the first question to Bill Belichick. Bill, if you thought you could get away with it, would you cheat to win the Super Bowl?
Right.
What would his answer be to that? I mean, if you thought you could get away with it, would you cheat to win a football game? Maybe.
We're just concerned about the Seahawks.
Right. You'd get a blow-off answer. Yep. You'd get the disapproving clucking of the tongue from the Peter Kings of the world, I'm sure. How dare you ask such a ridiculous question at such a hallowed event like this? Hey, isn't that somebody from some Spanish language station dressed up like a piñata?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe the biggest question in all this is, if you're the ball boy who deflated those footballs and may have been doing this for a while for the New England Patriots, when the organization comes to you and says somebody's going to take a fall for this, you know, what's it going to cost us? What's your response?
What's it going to cost us?
Yeah. What's it going to cost to pay? What do we
I think
to get you to fall on the sword?
$250,000 sounds like a good round figure to me.
I think I'd want more.
Would you want more than that?
I think I'd be asking for...
How are you going to get this money?
Maybe
Bob Kraft going to deliver you a sandwich
bag
full of 50s?
I'd be asking for maybe 50 grand for the next 10 years.
I want to lump sum. See, because what's going to stop them from cutting you off after a certain period of time? You can talk after 3 years, and you're just a disgruntled ex-ball boy at that point.
Oh, am I?
By the way, Peter King said,
here's the money they've been paying me. I could show them the money that's been put in my account at that point. I mean, it's not like the money's hidden.
It's severance, Tony.
Right.
No, that's why it comes in a brown paper bag.
That's right. That's why ball boys, they often get that 50,000 lump sum.
Peter King suggested, now this is ridiculous, there needs to be a better structure in place to monitor the pressure in the balls. Perhaps the ball boys need to pass through metal detectors on their way on and off the field. You ever heard of, you couldn't have a plastic needle for an air pump? I mean, seriously, Peter King wants the ball boys to pass through a metal detector. That's going to solve the problem.
No.
How about this? I stick the needle in the pump and I throw it under the bench when I leave the field.
Listen to this Pete Prisco tweet from a few seconds ago. Pete says, maybe the ball boys should call Doug Marrone to find out the secrets of getting paid to go away.
You got to work that into a contract.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the thing. If you're going to be a ball boy for the New England Patriots, maybe you have to have that worked out ahead of time. Ryan O'Halloran's going to join us from Mobile. Coming up, we'll talk about Greg Olsen being hired as the Jaguars' new general manager. Dan Hicken as well, about an hour away. We'll check in with Dan. And Bill Williamson covers the Raiders for ESPN.com. We'll get his view as a journalist who covered Olsen's tenure out in Oakland, and what are his strengths, what are his weaknesses, how much credit does Williamson give Olsen for the development of Derek Carr. Speaking of Derek Carr, interesting where you'll find him. SportsIllustrated.com did a do-over for the first round of this past year's NFL draft. Which players would have gone where to which teams had we had the foresight or the hindsight that we have now, knowing how these players would turn out after the rookie years. Where do you think Blake Bortles ended up? Who do you think the Jaguars took? Where do the other quarterbacks end up? We'll go through that a little bit later on as well. 641-1010, the number if you want to get in today. Fan Feedback Spotlight asking you this question. Have had a lot of interesting responses already to this. With the Pro Bowl coming up Sunday, obviously an absence of Jacksonville Jaguars on hand. Which Jaguar, if any, do you deem the most likely to be playing in the next Pro Bowl in January or February of 2016? Next season's Pro Bowl. You can share your thoughts with us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And I really trust Greg Olsen. I trust his knowledge base. I know his developmental process, how he develops players. He's done it with guys like John Kitna, Drew Brees. Derek Carr had a better year. You saw him progress as the year went on. And, you think, okay, now it's my job to surround him with good coaches and players so he has a chance for him to be his best.
Worked with John Kitna and Drew Brees in college, by the way, if you're wondering. That is Greg Olsen, new Jaguars offensive coordinator. Tony, this is a great song, and it stands on its own. My favorite Aerosmith song. I mean, it's probably maybe the most popular Aerosmith song. I don't know if there's another one that's more popular. But I immediately, the second I hear the opening note, my mind goes right to the training sequence from Armageddon. It's not that great of a movie, but that was, it must be, I don't know if it was just the perfect song choice for the montage or
it's
what
not,
happened.
Owen Wilson and Ben Stiller walking slow-mo and Starsky and Hutch.
It is not that. No, did they do that to this song?
I think it is.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
Sweet Emotions, great song. All right, let's go out to the, yeah, how would you describe Ryan O'Halloran when it comes to emotions? He's either kind of emotionless, you know, which is good as a reporter. You know, he takes his emotion out of it. Or he's a surly SOB, right? Those are two options. Let's go to Mobile, Alabama on the Garbo Auto Mall hotline from the Florida Times Union and Jaguars today, Mr. Ryan O'Halloran. What's up, Ryan? How are you, bud?
That's quite the introduction.
You like that?
my emotions today are relieved that this thing is over, the coordinator stuff, and surly because we have a six-hour drive come up later this afternoon.
Oh, you're driving back. That's right. Well, we appreciate you making your way to the telephone device to chat with us this morning. Let's start with Greg Olsen, Ryan. In your opinion, just your opinion, okay? What do you, is it good, bad, indifferent? What do you make of it?
A couple different angles on this one. If they would have announced him as a quarterback's coach and maybe brought in a more a coordinator with recent success, would have said, hey, that's a good combination because Olsen's track record, you know, guys swear by him, very well respected. I think if he works with Blake Bortles, that would be a good thing. In terms of the coordinator thing, you're rearranging deck chairs at this point. You don't want to say you settled for a candidate, but when Dave Caldwell said yesterday that for the most part they interviewed everybody they wanted to, that means they had a couple of people that were blocked, let's face it. So if this wasn't the third choice or the second choice, but I think the big thing with Olsen is he's going to be behind the scenes. They wanted a strong leader who could coach the coaches up, take their suggestions and be in line with what Gus wants to do, where that probably obviously wasn't the case the last 2 years.
Dave Caldwell spoke yesterday, too. I know you were out there for his press conference there in Mobile and him just talking to the media a little bit. One of the things he said was that Gus didn't want to lose out on Greg Olsen. What was your reaction to that quote from Dave Caldwell?
Well, the reaction was, okay, there's still a couple openings in the league, chiefly St. Louis. I think, you know, the rumbling around here is that Jeff Fisher was interested in Greg Olsen. So, you know, Gus wanted to nail this deal down, so they went and got him. You know, my first thought was probably what you're insinuating is that, okay, was there a line for this guy? But evidently there were a couple teams interested. So, you know, Gus talked to this guy last Thursday for 8 hours and obviously wanted to connect with him a little more, and then he was convinced that he was the right choice.
Adam Gase took the Chicago job yesterday to be reunited with John Fox. He, of course, came in here, I believe it was Sunday, and talked with the Jags. Ryan, do you get the sense, was the Jags' interest in him not all that great, or were they perhaps rebuffed where he said maybe they showed some interest? I know Gus said they didn't offer the job to anybody, but you can say, hey, if we were to offer you the job, what would you say? And that's not technically offering the job. Do you think that, you know, maybe he just wanted to say, okay, I got a bird in hand. Let me go see what Baltimore has to say. Let me see if I can do better. What do you make of the courtship of Adam Gase? Was it overblown?
No, no. I think there was a courtship, but I think it was for quarterback's coach. And so, obviously, in Gase's, you know, you can see Gase's deal saying, hey, I appreciate talking to me, but I want to see if I can get a coordinator job. And basically, all the while waiting, okay, John Fox, are you going to call me after 2 years of working for you in Denver? Well, he eventually did, and he joined them. So I think that was what the conversation was about, and that's why it didn't happen.
With the five or six guys we know they talked to, Ryan, do you think that they got the guy that they wanted the most of the five or six that they had talked to, or do you think that whoever they wanted the most decided to take another job, or was Olsen the man?
Well, I think once they got done of the six guys, not counting Marone, of the six guys they interviewed specifically for the coordinator job, this is the one that stood out to them, and because they obviously interviewed some guys early on because Olsen wasn't available right away because Oakland was still in limbo. But that they said that they were interested in from the get-go, so they had to wait for him to get out there. So I think this was their I do believe that this was the only guy they offered the job to, and this is the guy that they felt was the best fit.
Ryan O'Halloran here with us from the Florida Times Union out in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. We'll get to that in a minute. Ryan, now that Doug Marone has been hired and Greg Olsen, of course, at the offense coordinator spot, it seems like the rest of the staff may stay intact. Do you get that sense, or do you think that Olsen, after taking some time to evaluate, may make a few more changes?
No, there's going to be some changes. You know, one thing that Gus wanted to do, he wanted to make sure it didn't happen, was that they don't happen until everybody gets back to Jacksonville on Monday and Olsen comes in. Marone gets there, because let's say, you know, Marone's going to have a stake in this too, and meets with the current staff. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be a complete house cleaning, but there are a couple spots that could be changing, and those guys, you know, the sense around the coaching staff is they think that more changes are coming.
What's the timetable here with those guys getting to Jacksonville? I know they're not coming up there for the Senior Bowl. Are they going to be in next week talking about Marone and Olsen, or is it going to be a couple weeks?
No, they'll be here. I think they may be even in town Sunday, because I think they're going to hit, you know, get it going on Monday. Because the first thing I got to do is figure out the staff, and then they'll go from there. But they'll be in town pretty quick.
All right, give us some steaming hot Senior Bowl nuggets, please. Okay, who do you like? Who has caught your eye? Who do you think maybe has caught the Jaguars coaching staff's eye? Just what are you seeing in terms of them, you know, working with these guys, particularly on the South squad?
Well, good thing. I mean, the first thing that sticks out is good thing you're not coming here looking for a quarterback.
Yeah,
because they stink. You know, spread guys, you know, Blake Sims isn't a real, you know, one-year starter. Nick Marshall, Damon, tri-point quarterback here. What's that say about the SEC offenses? So, but one guy is Wolford, the tight end from Miami. Really impressive. You know, in the linebacker tight end drills yesterday, tight end, linebackers and safeties had no chance covering him. Really, you know, you really like, his size and speed. So I think he's developing into an option. And then one of the guys that's interesting that Hayes Carlion is going to be writing about tomorrow's Times Union is Lyndon Trail from Norfolk State. Started his career at Florida at 6'7", 200 pounds. Well, he's added 60 pounds. And I think, you know, they're working him at linebacker and defensive ends. So there's a couple guys. You know, as far as the lineman stuff, I mean, they do some one-on-one stuff, but it's not totally physical like you see in a training camp practice. But Dave Caldwell said yesterday that, you know, it's like any Senior Bowl compared to last year. Is some positions are stronger, some are weaker, and it sort of just weighs itself out.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you specifically about the pass rushers out there and how they've looked, whether it be outside linebacker or defensive end. How have they looked?
The two guys that stood out, Trey Flowers from Arkansas, and one thing that Hayes pointed out yesterday was, remember last year the big talk about Chris Smith was his you know, wingspan, that, you know, to get in front of offensive tackles. This guy has longer arms than Chris Smith, so that's going to, you know, earn him some, you know, consideration. And then Malden, the kid from Louisville, looks like he's winning a lot of his one-on-one battles. And there are a lot of guys in this game, a defensive end, a linebacker, or they're a 3-4 outside linebacker in college. What does that mean? They could be a 4-3 Leo for the Jaguars. So they're going to be mixing and matching some guys at positions here in the game on Saturday. But some pretty impressive guys in terms of just sacks total. So I think the Jaguars are obviously going to look at the Leo spot. If they don't do it in free agency, there could be a guy in, you know, the second round and beyond.
Ryan, what's the fallout been, the conversations either with fellow members of the media or any coaches or assistant coaches you've had a chance to talk with or listen to in regards to the whole Deflategate thing going on with the New England Patriots right now?
Gus was asked about that yesterday, and I've covered Gus Bradley for just about 2 years on the nose. He's never said no comment. Yesterday he came as close to that as possible. I mean, he literally ran up the stairs of the bleachers and somebody asked him about that. So, you know, everybody's sort of running away from me. You talk to some guys and they think it's like, so, you know, everybody does it. The Patriots just weren't careful enough. So it's not a big topic conversation like it will be this coming week in Arizona and certainly in the offseason.
I have a feeling the next team that gets caught doing this is the dumbest team in the league. Are they not? I mean, at least for this next season, right? You got to let it cool down. Or does everybody just go right back to business as usual? What do you think?
No, it's you're right on that, because that's a good example. Because remember after Spygate, I remember talking to defensive coordinators and stuff after that, and one of them said, okay, guess we got to stop doing that. Patriots got caught. And because they were sloppy in doing it, because it was in their cut-ups. So every team was seeing that they were doing it. So it just took one team to snitch on them. So, yeah, like, so if they stop doing that or more careful, then I think what teams will do now, instead of deflating every one of the footballs, you know, just have a couple for the key drives. A
couple of special softies.
Before we let you go, Ryan, what is the timetable for when Olsen and Bortles can get together and start getting into a playbook or what they want to do, or those two can start the coach-player relationship?
Well, I think the relationship's going to start unofficially pretty quick. You know, the actual meeting with a group of players is the first phase of the offseason is in early April. And by then, you know, they'll have a playbook ready to be sent out, because Dave Caldwell made a point of yesterday, there's going to be some carryover in the passing game, so Blake and the other guys wanted to learn a completely new system. So I think what's going to happen over the next couple months is, you know, Greg and Blake may run into each other, so to speak.
That'd be fortuitous.
Have some introductory conversation. So, and that's, I mean, and you talk about something that every team does. That's it too. So, but, you know, to put this full circle on this thing, Greg Olsen's success here is obviously going to be determined on the quarterback play, and that's why he's here. He's not here because he has a great receivers coach. So, you know, so he's got to be able to, he's plugged in with Blake.
There you go. And look, Gus knows, you know, look, the reaction, the best reaction has been lukewarm. All right. There's been a lot of Greg Olsen hiring reaction, simply because you look at the stats and where a lot of the teams that he coordinated ranked. But look, either he's going to get the job done or he's not, and the whole thing's going to get started over from scratch here, Ryan, if they don't get this thing in gear pretty soon. So, I mean, it's not like Gus doesn't realize what's at stake. So he's not going to pick a guy, you know, he's not going to cut off his nose to spite his face. He's going to pick the guy that he thinks is going to be best for the job, damn public opinion, which he should do, but he just better be right.
Yeah, and I think Gus said when the search started, well, this is a very desirable pro job. Well, I don't think it was. Because for this, let's face facts here, his team was 3-13 last year, last in offense. And the way the rules are built, you just can't go get a position coach on another team. They have to let him out of a contract. So,
right.
You know, there was a very good chance that this was going to be a quote unquote retread hire, and that's what's happened. You know, maybe the reaction of the fans is maybe more pointed toward Gus for making this hire. But if they score 25 points in the averaged 25 points a game the first month of the season, everybody was saying, hey, you know, looks like Gus knows what he's doing.
Well, sure. And it would probably be the first time Greg Olsen has orchestrated an offense that averaged 25 points a game. But love to see it happen. Well, Ryan, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the incredible stat about Greg is only 11 games of 30 or more points in his career.
Wow.
That's like 1.2 a year.
I wish him luck. He's not going to walk into a friendly environment. Look, Jack fans want to, you know, even if they're skeptical, they're wishing him luck too. What choice do you have? He's the guy now, and you hope they make the best of it. We'll see if they got the right guy for the job over the course of time. Ryan, great job by you and Hayes and everybody out there all week long. We appreciate you checking in. I guess, Tony, next time we'll see you out in Phoenix. How about that next week?
Well, I'll be there.
All right, buddy. We'll look forward to it. Thank you, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
You got it. Ryan O'Halloran. Follow him on Twitter simply at Ryan O'Halloran and read him on the digital pages of the Florida Times Union as well. Or I guess some people still get those ink stained pages, Tony, these days. I'm not a fan of the ink, but that's just me. All right. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010. We'll take some phone calls coming up on the other side. We'll take a look at one man's opinion of how the draft this past May would have gone with a year of hindsight under our belt, so we'll get to that coming up as well. Dan Hicken at the top of the hour. Bill Williamson covers the Raiders for ESPN.com. He'll join us in about 45 minutes, give us the opinion from the West Coast on Greg Olsen's prowess as an OC, at least his most recent stop out there with the Raiders. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Couple of tweets coming in on Greg Olsen from Chad Kuhn. Said, in regards to Olsen, as offensive coordinator and scoring, Tony, you need players to score. He hasn't had a lot of that in his career. Hey, guess what the Jags don't have, okay? A lot of offensive firepower, okay? Then he follows up, it'd be interesting to see his offensive output when he had, quote, better talent a la Bulger and Freeman years. Well, I'll say this, in terms of scoring offense, and really the yardage is great, and I know scoring can be a little iffy, but he's only been inside or better than 20th in scoring once in his career. And, yeah, he had great talent. Bulger had his best year, but he had Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, and Steven Jackson in their primes pretty much with the St. Louis Rams. So if tell me when that's walking through the door, right? And we all have hopes for Robinson, Lee, and Hearns around here in the wide receiver core. Don't know if they have any confidence that Denard Robinson's a full-time back at this stage, and, you know, Toby Gerhart is not exactly doing a Steven Jackson impersonation last year.
No, you know? He's not.
Not in his prime, anyway. So, you know, look, that's great. And people say, well, look at the great work he did with Derek Carr. They didn't have much to work with. Well, he didn't elevate that not much to
that's
work
right.
with.
They were 32nd in the league.
Right. So, you know, look, I hope he does well. And I understand Gus's point. He thinks he's the right guy to bring Blake Bortles along. Whatever the rest of it, that's the most important thing for this franchise. We'll get to in a moment. I found it interesting. It's just one man's opinion from Sports Illustrated redoing the first round of the NFL draft and where these teams would go. And including,
was it about halfway through the year Blake, that Gil Brandt did the same thing for NFL.com and had Blake number one?
Did he have him number one?
Yeah.
On that? May have. It sounds, I think you're right. This will be an interesting contrast. Contrast, I almost said. Yes, an interesting contrast. That. Let's get a couple calls in before we do that though. 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars today. Let's go to Quincy to start us off this morning. Hi, Quincy. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Something I found interesting is when they let go of Malarkey's staff, if you recall, they wanted to retain Mark Duffner, Jerry Sullivan, and Greg Olsen. And they wanted to keep Greg Olsen as just a quarterback coach. And but he got offered the job with the Oakland Raiders as the OC, so he went there. But I found it interesting. He wasn't good enough for Bradley to even consider being the OC here at that time, so he left and went to Oakland. But now all of a sudden he is, you know, so I don't know what can possibly change in that course of time, you know, a couple of years ago, that all of a sudden now he's good enough to be the OC and he replaces the guy that he chose instead of him in Frisch who left. And also, I wanted to make mention of Adam Gase, a report where in San Francisco he blew his second interview
right.
because he came off as cocky and arrogant. And I remember, I think it was Brian Sexton who interviewed Bradley and said that Marrone and Olsen were hired because they showed a lot of humility and they got along with, you know, very well with the other coaches, and that was very important to the culture of the franchise. So I was wondering, maybe they went in a different direction because of that and decided to settle on Olsen.
Well, you use the word settle, and it has a negative connotation. Maybe they opted for Olsen. Maybe they felt he's the better fit, all things considered. I'll say this about Gase, okay? Did Bradley consider him 2 years ago? Guys, first of all, put Olsen aside for a minute. Just because a guy wasn't a leading candidate 2 years ago doesn't mean he shouldn't be a leading candidate today. Guys emerge. Guys, you know, maybe they like the work he did with a rookie quarterback last year in Derek Carr. And how do we know he didn't consider him for offensive coordinator? When you just dismiss that out of hand, well, wouldn't even consider him for offensive coordinator 2 years ago. You don't know that. Maybe he already had a guy in mind, and most coaches do. When they take over a job, they say, well, if I ever get a head coaching job, they always have a short list. Here are the guys I'd call first and see if they want to be my offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, so on and so forth. And maybe he looked over to staff and he said, well, even though I've already got my list prepared, I like these three guys enough in Duffner, Sullivan, and Olsen to try to retain this part of the coaching staff.
Sure.
He identified that. I don't put much bearing into that whole situation.
Well, I'm looking at the timetable of it, too. Gus Bradley was hired on January 17th of that year. Olsen was hired as the offensive coordinator in Oakland on the 19th, is when that got reported. So that's a two-day window, basically, where Gus Bradley had the opportunity to talk to Olsen or not talk to Olsen about retaining him here in Jacksonville. And that's in the middle of everything on this staff basically being turned over. You had an owner that had just hired a GM that was trying to find his next head coach. This is after a chaotic 2012. I don't know what Gus Bradley's feelings were about Greg Olsen in 2013. I don't think any of us can really know how he felt about him as a coach in 2013. We know that Olsen wound up in Oakland instead of probably waiting around to see what the Jaguars were going to do with their coaching staff because he was offered the job somewhere else, and it was a step up for him. Did he know he was going to be considered for the offensive coordinator job in Jacksonville? I don't know.
But being considered is not the same as being offered.
Right, and he was the quarterback's coach here. He wasn't the offensive coordinator.
Who was the quarterback here? Where would you go? Okay?
And
anywhere where he wasn't.
And Joe Fortunato brought this up to me yesterday. Who wasn't it a coach that kind of put it out there, the Blaine Gabbert thing? I can't remember if it was Olsen or if it was somebody else in the coaching staff, but it felt like it came from inside the building that started leaking out, that nickname of Blaine Gabbert.
Oh, Blaine Gabbert?
Yeah, where it was, he never takes responsibility for what is happening. It's always somebody else's fault.
It was Olsen.
Yeah, so why would he stay here with that guy?
That's a great example, great case in point. Look, plenty of guys. Mark Trestman, 2 years ago, most people in the NFL average fan didn't know who he was until he got hired to be the head coach from the CFL to go coach the Chicago Bears. Had a great first year, was terrible this year. If this year was his resume, shouldn't get another job in the league.
Right.
They fell apart. They were, they put up some interesting individual stats, but the team as a whole didn't do a good job, yet people were excited about the prospect. Oh, they might talk to Trestman. Well, 2 years ago, he wasn't good enough for you. Now he is. I mean, you could say that about just about anybody that you don't hire the first time around. Rex Ryan, Atlanta didn't want him the first time. They wanted him this time. He turned them down.
Yeah.
He said, no, I'm not going down that road again. What happened? Yeah, it's certainly Rex had a good couple of first years, but has been mediocre to bad since then. You know, did he do something that all of a sudden makes you think he's a much better coach than he was the first time around? You know, in the same circumstance with a team that didn't hire him and certainly were interested in looking at him. Guys do change. Guys get better. I mean, it's a different set of circumstances. I'm not going to get too caught up in he wasn't the OC 2 years ago here, so why should he be now?
Right.
Let's go to Jimmy up next here on 1010XL. How are you, Jimmy?
I'm good, guys. How you guys doing?
Good. What's up?
I was calling to talk about the whole Patriots thing, but to touch on something, I mean, the majority of the coaches that the Jaguars have hired under Gus Bradley have all been coaching guys who coach them up and then coordinate. And I don't think Adam Gase had the ability to coach the quarterbacks to the ability Gus Bradley wanted him to.
Well, according to Ryan O'Halloran, that's what exactly what they wanted him for, to coach the quarterbacks, more so than be the offensive coordinator.
See, that's just, it's so weird how that worked out, because Adam Gase always just seemed to me like a guy. You know, he doesn't seem like a guy who's, you know, he had Peyton Manning. I mean, before Peyton Manning, who was this guy? Who was he? Like, who was he? What did he do?
Well, before Peyton Manning, who was Jim Caldwell? You say the same thing in Indianapolis, and he turned out to be a pretty good guy who can stand on his own 2 feet. So that doesn't mean
totally
Gase can't do that. I mean, we don't know. I don't know anyway.
Right. And another thing that we were talking about on Twitter a minute ago was the penalty for the Patriots. In my opinion, I think that this needs to be nipped in the bud, because now this is the second offense that Bill Belichick's had, one under Tagliabue and one under the new commissioner right now, Goodell, that we have. So in my opinion, I believe that I think that should be hit for salary cap. I mean, the Redskins and the Cowboys were for something that stupid. And they got, what, $5 million docked? Something like that, some crazy number off their salary cap. You got to hit them where it hurts, because, in my opinion, I think if Bill Belichick gets caught doing something like this ever again, he should be Sean Payton for at least 1 year. Because now the integrity.
There are a lot of people that think he should be that now. You know, right. If in fact his fingerprints are found to be on, you know, the smoking gun, so to speak. You know,
there's never going to be any definitive evidence against Bill Belichick, because the guy's just a genius when it comes to just covering things up. The guy's a great coach. There's no question about it. Look what he's done. But at the same time, we have to protect the integrity of the game. You got a lot of players, a lot of people, a Hall of Fame coach and Don Shula calling him out before this even came out. That goes along. I mean, you got to listen to what Don Shula says, because it's Don Shula. The guy, you know, he is who he is. But at the same time, you said first round pick, and I'm not going to disagree with you. Everything I was reading was like third and fourth round or second and third round.
Yeah, we were talking about it on Twitter. You said that a salary cap. I said I think the draft pick would have a bigger impact because Spygate was a first round pick they lost. And as Tony reminded me, Bountygate ended up being 2 seconds because New Orleans didn't have a first. That's a significant blow.
It is.
To a team.
I think it should be both. Why not hit them for a salary cap hinder and then hit them for a draft pick? This needs to make a huge statement. Right now, Roger Goodell, this is the biggest decision, in my opinion, next to the decision he made with Ray Rice and all that other garbage that was going on. This is the biggest decision he has, because now he's going to go ahead and say, oh, it's okay, we'll just find you. I mean, what is $250,000 to Robert Kraft and the Patriots?
I agree with you.
Especially if they win this game and he gives them another raise, like he did in 2008 when they got hit with all the Spygate stuff. I mean, you do. You have to hit them where they hurt. And, look, just to clarify something, Alfie did tweet me just a few moments ago that Greg Olson was actually already interviewing at Oakland before Gus Bradley even had the job here in Jacksonville. And looking again at the timeline, Jed Fish was actually hired the same day that Olson was in Oakland. So it seems like Gus Bradley had that plan in place. I'm coming in
most
on the 17th.
Coaches do.
Fish is coming with me on the 19th. Babich, I think, was around the same time, too. So he had his staff in place. Olson was already gone before that ever occurred.
Yeah, that's not a big deal to me. Let me take a peek at this because we're going to be jammed up pretty much the rest of the show here, Tony. Sports Illustrated, Doug Farrar, it's just a guy. Okay, he's just I don't mean to disparage him. He's just
a guy,
just
named
a guy
Doug.
With an opinion, okay? Redid the first round of the NFL draft based on what we know after their rookie seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Derek Carr going number one overall to Houston. I think it's a big leap. First of all, if you just base it just on their play of the rookie season, I'd take Teddy Bridgewater over any of these quarterbacks.
Me too.
Okay. Carr had a better touchdown to interception ratio, but there are factors that go into that. When you talk about turnovers per game, they were the same. Carr had 16 turnovers in 16 games. Bridgewater had 12 in 12 games.
They won 7 games.
They won a lot of games, right? I thought Bridgewater was better than Derek Carr this year, but that's where he opts to go. Second pick in the draft, Greg Robinson went to the Rams. Of course, the offensive lineman out of Auburn. He's got him taking Odell Beckham Jr. I don't think that's crazy whatsoever. They need a playmaker and an identity on their offense. And he was phenomenal this year. If he plays like that the rest of his year, he's worth the number one overall pick. The Jags, original pick, UCF quarterback Blake Bortles.
Mm-hmm.
The redo pick, Pittsburgh defensive lineman Aaron Donald. Okay. The blurb.
Interesting.
The Jaguars certainly believe in Bortles, and their faith may pay off in the long term, but what would their defense look like with Donald and the horribly underrated Sendarek Marks terrorizing quarterbacks and stopping running backs? Donald was the most impressive rookie tackle since Ndamukong Suh, and his future potential seems limitless. Love him as a player. What would the Jags do for a quarterback? Have they not taken, I don't know, a quarterback, right? I mean, they'd be in this position now, Tony, where people are, I'm getting the feeling, Marcus Mariota, unless the Eagles, because of the Chip Kelly thing, want to make some huge splash, I think he slides past three. I don't think he's going top two, and I don't know if necessarily anyone's going to be willing to trade up in the top 10 to grab him from Jacksonville. Regardless, you go through the rest of the first round, one other quarterback gets taken in the first round, and it's not Blake Bortles. It's Jimmy Garoppolo going to the Minnesota Vikings at 32. So Farrar not only thinks the Jags shouldn't have taken Bortles.
He was killer in the preseason.
He didn't think anybody should have taken Bortles, according to him. And but just to keep in mind, Jake Matthews, not in his first round either.
Yeah.
Don't know if that's an oversight. Don't know what that is exactly.
By the way,
but
you mentioned Odell Beckham Jr.
Yes.
Have you seen the new Jerry Rice commercial he's doing with the kid? The tortoise versus the hare.
Yes.
And he's like, maybe you should know your facts about hares before you start questioning the greatest wide receiver ever. And he's like, wait, are you Odell Beckham Jr.?
I know. I thought that was pretty good. That's pretty good company there for ODB.
You ain't kidding.
To get in after 12 games on the field.
Pretty ridiculous.
All right. So I would basically say I wanted to bring it to your attention. Don't waste your time on the SI redo of the first round.
That's absurd.
Not a big fan of that whole many lines of thinking that are incorporated into that. Coming back with this date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL and the Road Scout. Dan Hicken, live in Mobile. That's coming up next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Horribly underrated Cindric Marks terrorizing quarterbacks and stopping running backs. Donald was the most impressive rookie tackle since Ndamukong Suh, and his future potential seems limitless. Love him as a player. What would the Jags do for a quarterback had they not taken, I don't know, a quarterback, right? I mean, they'd be in this position now, Tony, where people are, I'm getting the feeling, Marcus Mariota, unless the Eagles, because of the Chip Kelly thing, want to make some huge splash, I think he slides past three. I don't think he's going top two, and I don't know if necessarily anyone's going to be willing to trade up in the top 10 to grab him from Jacksonville. Regardless, you go through the rest of the first round, one other quarterback gets taken in the first round, and it's not Blake Bortles. It's Jimmy Garoppolo going to the Minnesota Vikings at 32. So Farrar not only thinks the Jags shouldn't have taken Bortles.
He was killer in the preseason.
He didn't think anybody should have taken Bortles, according to him. And but just to keep in mind, Jake Matthews, not in his first round either.
Yeah.
Don't know if that's an oversight. Don't know what that is exactly.
By the way,
but
you mentioned Odell Beckham Jr.
Yes.
Have you seen the new Jerry Rice commercial he's doing with the kid? The tortoise versus the hare.
Yes.
And he's like, maybe you should know your facts about hares before you start questioning the greatest wide receiver ever. And he's like, wait, are you Odell Beckham Jr.?
I know. I thought that was pretty good. That's pretty good company there for ODB.
You ain't kidding.
To get in after 12 games on the field.
Pretty ridiculous.
All right. So I would basically say I wanted to bring it to your attention. Don't waste your time on the SI redo of the first round.
That's absurd.
Not a big fan of that whole many lines of thinking that are incorporated into that. Coming back with this date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL and the Road Scout. Dan Hicken, live in Mobile. That's coming up next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, we got to bang it out because the Road Scout is waiting. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Happy birthday to a trio of former Jaguars today, Tony. 1969, Vinnie Clark was born on this date, January 22nd. Bucky Brooks, a short-timer as far as the Jags were concerned, born on this date in 1971. And Reggie Barlow, still the best, most electric return man in Jaguar history. It's a low bar, but maybe Tannen Doss, maybe Randall Cobb, maybe somebody else will take that mantle from him this year. Super Bowl 18 played on this date in 1984. The Raiders beat the Redskins 38-9. We talked about that one last week with the Marcus Allen reverse field run. And 5 years later, Super Bowl 23, San Francisco defeats Cincinnati, one of the better Super Bowl games, 20-16 in Miami. Who was the MVP of that one? What do you think?
Montana?
It was Rice. It was Montana to Taylor won the game.
Yeah.
Right? But it was Rice was the MVP. I want to say Montana was the MVP in the three other games that he won.
Yeah, Taylor, that was his only catch of the day.
I know, right? But that's what stands out to a lot of people, obviously. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. on Gate Parkway, Family Dentistry, Cosmetic Work, whatever you need. Full service shop there. 620-9225, the number. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick has addressed the Deflategate situation for the first time today publicly. This morning, Belichick addressed the media, stating that I have no explanation for what happened, and I was completely and totally unaware of any of this we're talking about these last couple of days until Monday morning. He followed that up with a bunch of talk about they're going to inflate the balls to 0.2 pounds more than the required level or something. Apparently, he's still worried that the cold air took the 2 pounds of air pressure.
Right. Not 2 tenths, Bill. 2 full pounds. By the way, wouldn't take questions after that.
No.
Read a prepared statement.
Wouldn't take questions, and the whole thing came across as, look, if you believe Bill Belichick, then the whole thing came across as, ask Tom.
Your quarterback's going to know more about that.
I don't know. I don't touch the balls once we get started playing.
I don't know much about this air pressure.
Just trying to get ready for Seattle.
Trying to play a game here.
It's a good football team. The Seattle Seahawks, speaking of them, running back Marshawn Lynch has been fined $20,000 by the league for his obscene gesture that he made after scoring the go-ahead touchdown.
He said, these ain't deflated, baby!
For the Seahawks in Sunday's NFC Championship game. This may just be the preamble for fine season for Marshawn Lynch, who refused to speak to the media following the championship game. He has been fined $100,000 in the last year for not speaking to the media. It started last year during Super Bowl week, and what do you know? The Seahawks are back, so I doubt Marshawn will speak. I'm sure he'll be doing the same song and dance this year, and thank all of us media yokels for being so interested in him and his running style and him being the heart and soul of that team and that big touchdown. And can they repeat his back-to-back champions? He'll thank us all for being interested
to be here.
His opinion.
Thanks for the question.
On what we want to hear from Marshawn Lynch. A little ridiculous from his perspective. That is the Honda Drive Around the NFL.
Dan Hicken's Senior Bowl reports are brought to you by Dandy Sandwiches. Anytime fresh for 58 years.
Road Scout, hello, Dan Hicken. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
We're hanging in there, Hick. You know, we kind of knew what was coming down. It wasn't official, I don't think, by the time we talked yesterday with Greg Olson. You tell me. I have not been to the Senior Bowl. What is the scuttlebutt situation? Do all the JAG media clump together just like it's a training camp practice, or are you guys talking to media from other markets? Are you talking to other coaches as well? And if so, what was the reaction, if any, to the Greg Olson hiring?
Well, we don't clump together. We kind of it's inside a stadium, so we're spread out. Now, if we get word that, Dave Caldwell's available at 11:15, then we'll all find a spot, get Dave. Gus has been easy because he's after practice and he's the head coach, so that's been an easy situation to handle. So you get a chance to talk to a lot of different people. Everybody wants to know about Greg Olson and why Greg Olson, and I understand. And I'll say this, the Jaguars really believe he's the right fit. They really believe he develops young quarterbacks, that he can develop young quarterbacks. They really feel like, in talking to a lot of people, that he's highly respected in the league. He hasn't had a lot of great players to work with. If you go down the list of the guys he's been dealt in his career, and he's still getting jobs. So he must be doing something right. But really, in the end, it's all about what that quarterback does for you. I mean, we can go... If I ask you who the play caller is for any of the top offenses in the league, they're the top offenses in the league because Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Peyton Manning are their quarterbacks, right?
For the most part. Yeah, sure. For the most part, I think. But I think if you look, Brady's gone through several offensive coordinators up there, and it really hasn't altered anything they do. Sometimes you do get a guy who's a hot coordinator and he ascends to the head coach, a guy like Sean Payton who's in control of the offense. And
right.
I think there is something to that. But obviously he's got Drew Brees to work with. But Dan, I think the danger is, you say, well, what has Greg Olson had to work with? Well, you look at the Jags roster, what does he have to work with? He has a lot of raw talent, maybe, but it's raw. And, I don't want it to be a situation where we look back in a year or two and say, well, you know, no surprise, he did what he typically does. He helped develop some guys, but ultimately the offense wasn't ranked very high because he didn't have all that much to work with. They got to get him some more to work with.
There's no doubt about it, and that's, you know, one thing that Caldwell talked about yesterday is we got to do a better job of giving these coaches a chance to be successful, you know, because I had asked Dave about Marone and, you know, any concern about him being a, you know, one-and-done guy, and Caldwell's take on that was, I hope he is, you know, because that means he did something pretty good here. So, you know, we're excited if our, I hope all our assistants become head coaches. So, I mean, that's his attitude, and I can respect that. So, it's going to be interesting, man, but you're right. I mean, look, I'm not defending the hiring of Greg Olsen. I'm just sort of telling you what the Jags are saying about it.
I hear you.
Gus feels about it. He, you know, there's a familiarity there. He really feels strongly, and the word that he used a lot was fit. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I tend to be like more of the fans, like, what are we doing here? But it's part of their plan. And, you know, look, I know this. Caldwell and Bradley both know how important of a hire it is. You know, I mean, the revamping of the offensive side of the ball's coaching staff. I mean, we're getting into the make or break time for these guys and for Blake Bortles too. I mean, you know, quarterbacks don't get as long as they used to, do they, guys?
No, ask EJ Manuel all about it.
Yeah. So, you know, people are expecting a lot of improvement from Blake. And, they have a plan in place for him for this off season, and they went over it with him, and they love those intangibles about Blake Bortles. So, they're excited about what he's going to do this off season. Hopefully that translates to the field starting in September.
Hick, it was virtually unanimous that day two of practice, the shining star was Miami tight end Clive Walford. Yesterday. Have you had a conversation with the Jags tight end coach Ron Middleton and told him to slow his roll a little bit with this kid? He's playing himself right out of our clutches in the second round.
Right?
I mean, I saw lines like, look, I'll tell you this. I'm not, you know, I play the role of a rogue scout, but you guys know, I throw them up there and sometimes they stick. But I'll tell you this. I watched him run, you know, in the 7-on-7, probably, you know, 6 to 10 routes yesterday, and he didn't miss a ball, and he was wide open. And I compared him against the Auburn tight end, who was, you know, also on the South roster, and he didn't get open, and he didn't catch the ball. And this guy, it was like, it was impressive. I mean, it was impressive. I talked to him on Monday night, and I said, all right, so who do tight ends these days emulate? And of course, he had the perfect answer, Gronk. We all want to be like Gronk. So, and he's not that size or, you know, caveman like, but he's got a smoothness to his route running, and he's big enough. I think he's listed. I think he was like, what, 6'4", high 250s maybe. So, Middleton needs to settle down there, and we'll see where this kid lands. But I saw one line said might be the best tight end in the country, not that Senior Bowl, you know.
Hey, Dan, can we all agree Al Golden must suck because Miami keeps putting out NFL talent and they can't do squat with it while they're down there in Coral Gables? We can agree on that, right?
Well, I'm going to tell you this. You know, that Dorsett kid is, I don't know how he wasn't one of the best receivers in the country. I told you guys yesterday, they got a lot of good. I think this receiver thing is going to keep going. You know, I think you're going to have rookie receivers make great impact again this year. And he looks like a notch better than all of them to me. He looks smooth. Not, you know, we talked about him returning. He can run. I mean, he's good. He's a good football player. And then you mix in Perryman and Chicolo, and you scratch your head. 6 and 7?
Right.
Come on.
Come on, Al. Not so golden down there. All right, Hick, you do a tremendous job. You driving back or you flying? You got the Learjet gassed up or Shad picking you up? Or how's that going?
Well, to give you a clue, we're at about an altitude of about 3-4 feet, and we're going about 74. I'll say miles.
Gotcha.
An hour.
So you're in a pickup truck that just went over a speed bump. Is what you're saying, basically.
Right.
All right, Hick. Safe travels. We appreciate the reports all week, man.
Yep.
We'll see you, Dan Hick, and brought to you by Dandy Foods on the way back in the 1010 XL. scooter. I don't know what he's driving, but he's on his way back. Bill Williamson going to join us next from ESPN.com on the Garber Auto Mall Hotline. We'll get into Greg Olson. We'll get into JDR out in Oakland and other Raider-related crossovers with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Coming up next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. Jaguars today, live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Jags overhauling the offensive coaching staff somewhat this week. Former Bills head coach Doug Marrone comes in to coach the offense. He gets the assistant head coaching tag as well. And, of course, Greg Olson returns to the Jaguars, but now in the offensive coordinator capacity that he held down most recently in Oakland. Bill Williamson covers the Oakland Raiders for ESPN.com, and he's kind enough to join us on the Garber Auto Mall Hotline. Good morning, Bill. Thanks for getting up early on the West Coast. How you doing, man?
No worries. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
We're doing well. Tell us how we're doing. We want to know, how are we doing with Greg Olson? Because, Bill,
You tell us, and we'll tell you.
Right, and we'll tell you all about JDR. We'll swap info here. But seriously, the Jags are 31st in offense. They go out and hire the OC of the team that's 32nd in offense. Gus Bradley says it's not about the stats. You tell us, is Greg Olson a brilliant hire, an okay hire, a terrible hire? How would you characterize it?
Oh, well, you know, look, he just said 32nd. I can't say brilliant. We'll go with okay. I don't think he's a terrible hire. I think he's a legitimate NFL offensive coach. I think he has a close relationship with Gus Bradley. That's important. I think he knows the Jaguars system. He was there. You know, like I tell Raider fans all the time, what do you expect? Who do you think that they're going to get? These lower level teams, they constantly make changes, and then they always, the fan base always think that they're going to get the guy. Well, you know, Jeff Del Rio is a good fit for the Raiders, but nobody else wanted him. But it's a good fit for the Raiders, so you got to look at it that way. So, you know, I understand Olson is not inspiring, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you all the reasons why he can be, but I think he fits what the head coach wants, and that's where you start.
He's been there for 2 years as the offensive coordinator. Obviously, this year you guys drafted Derek Carr, named him the starter before the season got started. How did he develop over the course of the year in that offense?
Oh, you know what? He was he didn't make a fool of himself. And as a rookie, that's important. And he had some big games. And there were 3 or 4 games where, hey, he looked really good. And then there's other games where he regressed. But, you know, they're very excited about Carr out in Oakland. They think he can be a legitimate upper-level NFL quarterback, and Greg Olson had a lot to do with it. And I think that's part of the reason why he's in Jacksonville now, because it's the same situation. So he's going from one – he knows how to work with young quarterbacks. So I think Greg Bortles will get better under Greg Olson. I mean, Carr did, and Olson was one of his primary coaches.
I found it interesting because John DeFilippo, who was his quarterback's coach, got the offense coordinator job in Cleveland as well. Bill, and I guess in general, you followed the NFL for a long time, covered the league for a long time. What is more important to a young quarterback's development? Is it the QB coach who works with him day in, day out on the intricacies of the game, or is it the offensive coordinator who tries to take his strengths and put him in a system where he can excel?
You know, it really depends on the expertise of the offensive coordinator and the personalities of all three involved and the trust level in the quarterback coach. I mean, the answer can be quarterback coach. But I think in this instance, they're all hands are on deck with Derek Carr. Greg Olson, as you guys were, maybe you already know, is a very personable guy, very likable guy. Derek Carr is the same type of kid. So I think they did have a relationship. I don't know what Bortles is like personality-wise, but, Greg Olson's not coming in here like Todd Haley and trying to ruffle feathers like he did with Roethlisberger. There's going to be a lot of nurturing there.
How effective do you think a job did Greg Olson do taking advantage of the talent he had? Look, the Oakland Raiders aren't going to be confused for the Denver Broncos with what they have on the offensive side of the ball, but how effective of a job do you feel like he did getting what he could out of the offensive talent that the Oakland Raiders have?
Well, I mean, look, they're 32nd. So, I mean, nobody did a good job last year. I mean, that's just the reality. But you look at it, they did have the rookie quarterback, and you're right. They did not have much talent at all. I mean, James Jones, the third option in Green Bay all those years, becomes the number one option in Oakland by a long shot. I mean, he was the only receiver that had more than 47 catches and four touchdowns. So there wasn't a whole lot of weaponry there. Their tight end averaged 9 yards a catch. I think if you ask Olsen, I think the mistake that group made last year was that they sat on Darren McFadden and Maurice Jones-Drew way too long. Latavius Murray, 6'3", 228 pounds, kid out of Central Florida, missed his rookie season in 13, played well in the preseason, but didn't sniff the field really, had just a handful of carries until like week 9, week 10. And then he really, he made some plays and brought some spark to that offense. So I think that was the mistake. And if he learns anything from this year, is hey, don't sit on the young talent.
Was there some? Well, he won't have to worry about that here. That's what he's got. He's got yeah, nothing but young, for the most part, on the Jacksonville roster. But was that at all a case with sometimes that you have with young backs? Pass protection isn't their forte, Bill. And it could have been a case with we've got a rookie quarterback in there. Let's at least continue to rely on these veterans because we know they're able to pick up the blitz and they'll be in the right position. Did that factor into it?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't think they could. I don't think that they felt they could trust Murray in practice. But look, at you're 0-9, you're 0-10. Jones-Drew is getting like 1.2 yards a carry. McFadden's going right into the garden, falling down. Give the young guy a chance. You know, it's all about the future at this point. Save everybody's job. And they admitted that they made, at least Sperano, the former interim coach, admitted late that was a mistake. But yeah, and another thing is that they wanted to run the ball a lot, but they fell behind so much that they just passed and passed and passed. I mean, Derek Carr was almost set the rookie pass attempt record. I mean, he just threw all the time. So I think Greg Olsen, if you asked him, would like to get more balance this year. I mean, that was the plan in Oakland and just never materialized.
How comfortable was Derek Carr with everything that he was asked to do in that offense? It felt like, from the outside looking in, that was an offense that ran a lot of short routes because that's what Derek Carr was comfortable doing. It's what he had done in college. Is that kind of your sense of it, too?
Yeah, I mean, what drove a lot of fans crazy last year was the Raiders were in a lot of third and longs. So say they're in 3rd and 8, and he dumps it off 4 yards, and now it's 4th and 2. That happens constantly. And maybe that's on Olsen. Maybe that's on Derek Carr being just worried about checking down. But it was very, very conservative. You know, they passed a lot on 3rd and short. There was just a lot of inconsistencies. And again, I think that goes back to them being a really bad team. And then, you know, and again, that goes on coaching and that goes on players. So I wouldn't, as we evaluate Greg Olsen, I wouldn't really look at it all on him. I mean, there was a lot of reasons why. And I'm sure that's the same case with Jaguars last year if we're evaluating one of their coaches.
No question. Bill Williamson here with us from ESPN.com. The new head coach now, our former head coach in Jacksonville, Jack Del Rio, seemed very early in the process, right? Even towards the end of the year, I think even before the season ended, you heard some speculation that Del Rio may be a target in Oakland. What was it about him that Mark Davis said, this is the guy we got to go out and sign?
You know, I think he really liked his experience. And he knew Jack a little bit. And, you know, Mark is a young owner. You know, he didn't do anything when Al Davis was alive. When his father was alive, Mark was just basically around. And he didn't do anything. Mark hires Reggie McKenzie basically to be Al Davis, to make every decision. Well, his first decision was to hire Dennis Allen, who had no NFL head coaching experience. And it was a disaster. He won 8 games in 28 games. So, and Mark never really felt a connection to Dennis Allen. So he wanted to get an experienced head coach that he felt like he could have a personal relationship with. And that was Jack, and Jack's a local guy. I mean, he was a superstar high school athlete just 10 miles down the road from the Oakland Coliseum. So all those fit, and Jack wanted the Raider job. So, and which is important because it's never really been a choice job around the league. So all those factors made it pretty obvious. I mean, to me, they interviewed 7 people, but, you know, Del Rio was kind of the favorite all the way along.
How far below expectations did this Oakland Raiders team play this year? They spent a lot of money in free agency, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And basically, when it came down to the end of the day, had nothing to show for it in the win-loss column. How much pressure is on this team going forward?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they took a step backward. They went from 4-12 to 3-13 after having $60 million-plus in salary cap room. And, I mean, it's inexcusable. It shouldn't happen. Now, all positive folks will say, hey, look, they made strides because they got Carr and Mac, and they had a good draft, and that's true. You know, there is hope for the future, but this is how I look at NFL season. They're precious, and they're singular, and you can't blow it. You got to keep going up. And so, to me, the pressure's on Reggie McKenzie, and they're going to have a surplus of cap room again. It's going to be interesting if they're going to be able to appeal to the to the top dollar free agent players. That didn't happen last year. Jack Del Rio is certainly a established coach. I don't know if he's the type of coach that will make a free agent change his mind. Maybe some from Denver, but we'll see. But, yeah, the Raiders still have a long way to go.
Bill, we'll wrap up with this. Just from your observation, I know he didn't play very much, but is Maurice Jones-Drew done in the NFL, or if he found the right situation, could he still – give us one more productive season?
You know, he did not have a – he was injured, you know, knicky-knack stuff, but he finished with 96 yards.
I know.
I don't know, you know. I mean, you would have to say, hey, Jack Del Rio's there, a coach that coached him for, what, 4 – I don't know how many years, several. If it's going to work, maybe it'll work with Jack, but – you know, I think the Raiders are going to be looking for more help, outside help at running back. So I can't say that Jones-Drew will be here for sure.
Yeah, I would expect they'd probably move on. Certainly looks like Latavius Murray is going to be the centerpiece of that running game, and with good reason.
And he should be, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. Bill, we appreciate the time, man. If you're out in Arizona, we'll look you up. Are you heading out there for Super Bowl next week?
I'm actually not. You cover the Raiders, you're not always going to the Super Bowl.
this is understandable. We get there's so many similarities between what's going on out there, the 4 to 3 wins and a lot more. Bill, we appreciate the time, though, this morning. We encourage folks to give you a look on Twitter as well, B. Williamson NFL, and check him out on ESPN.com covering the Oakland Raiders. Thanks so much for your time, Bill.
Hey, thanks for having me. Take care, guys.
You got it, buddy. Bill Williamson covering the Raiders. So, Tony, I mean, basically in a nutshell.
I forgot to ask him if he wanted to apologize for Jerry Porter.
Yeah, well, another. I just as soon forget that one as would pretty much everybody here on the First Coast. It wasn't Williamson's fault, but I guess he feel, you know, pretty matter of fact, look, nobody had a good year. You can't have a good year.
It's funny how much it sounds like Jacksonville.
I mean, Tony, 4-12 to 3-13.
I don't know whose fault it was.
Right, and you said that you're probably. I mean, it was almost like he was listening to Jaguars Today on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, I bet you guys have a lot of different people you can point to. You're damn right, we do.
You ain't kidding.
And but I think his point is he thinks he is a decent developer of young quarterbacks,
sure.
And that's his forte. And from that standpoint, I mean, that's the most critical thing. Blake Bortles' development, if he turns out to be that, if he is a guy that gets the most out of Blake Bortles, then he's done a tremendous job. That's his primary job. His job is to put points and yards up on the board, but the way to do that is to turn Blake Bortles into a guy who realizes his full
Absolutely,
potential.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, coming up, Fan Feedback Spotlight, Tony, which is brought to you by Foundation Professionals of Florida, asking folks today with the Pro Bowl just a few days away, who's the next Jag that will make it to a Pro Bowl, hopefully next year. If you have a thought on that, you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. You can always weigh in at facebook.com/Jaguars Today. And Tony, the ultimate Super Bowl snack guide. We've got that for you coming up in a moment as well. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the home stretch, we'll get to the Fan Feedback Spotlight. coming up here, Tony, Donna Murphy pointed this out to me on Food Spin, which is a spinoff of Deadspin, which is a site I frequent, and I know you do as well. They had what they deemed the ultimate Super Bowl snack playoff.
Sweet.
Come up with a 32 snack bracket, not a 64.
For during the game.
They've got, yeah, this is for snacking for your Super Bowl party, basically. Okay. You know, that kind of thing. There's four regions. There's the potato region, the corn region,
okay,
the cheese region,
yeah,
and nuts and such, okay, is the other region. So I will give you the seedings. You tell me who you would have voted for and who you think won the first round of voting.
Okay.
Okay? We'll start in the potato division. Ridged chips, think Ruffles, versus Pringles.
Ridge chips.
Yeah, got to crush them, right? Because you can't dip anything on a Pringle, for goodness sake.
Absolutely.
Things are going to crack. Okay, your 2 seed versus 7 seed. You had salt and vinegar chips versus salt and pepper chips.
Salt and vinegar.
Have you ever tried those salt and pepper chips?
They're
hideous.
They're awful.
They're awful. They're terrible. So, yes, regular chips.
Like Lay's?
Like, I guess, a Lay's classic.
Okay.
Versus a kettle chip.
I would prefer Lay's.
I would prefer kettle chips, and they crush the regular chips.
Really?
Yeah. I like the original Lay's, but if I'm going to eat potato chips, I'll eat those 40% less fat, because every brand has a 40% less fat variety of kettle chips, and they won big time. And then finally, your 4 versus 5, sour cream and onion versus barbecue. Who you got?
Sour cream and onion.
Sour cream and onion won 53.13 to 46.87 over barbecue. Corn division, tortilla chips versus blue corn chips.
Oh, tortilla. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
What
is that, blue corn
really a
stuff?
Question?
Right? Popcorn versus corn nuts.
I'd prefer corn nuts.
See, I think I would too. A popcorn is not a very Super Bowl party snack, is
no.
it? You want something that you can dip?
I've kind of been ruined on popcorn ever since I worked at a movie theater, too. I just, I don't eat
point.
It much.
Popcorn crush corn nuts, by the way, like 84 to 16.
Okay.
But I'm with you. I think I would have gone corn nuts on that one. Fritos versus Bugles.
Fritos.
This is not even close on this one, right? The 3-6 matchup. Fritos going to crush the Bugles. Fritos, one of the great chips of all time. Cool Ranch Doritos. I don't know how they decided on these, but Cool Ranch versus Hint of Lime tortilla chips.
Ooh.
Cool Ranch.
I'd rather have the tortilla chips, personally.
Cool Ranch all day and twice on Super Bowl Sunday.
I much prefer the nacho cheese Doritos. I don't really like the Cool Ranch Doritos.
I love the Cool Ranch. The Hint of Lime anything
I like lime.
Are disgusting.
I like lime.
Okay, not a fan.
I love those lime tortilla chips.
Which snack is better in the cheese division, Tony?
Okay.
Nacho cheese Doritos, the number one seed, versus cheese and crackers.
I like both, but I'll take the nacho cheese Doritos.
I'd probably take cheese and crackers if it were the right
cracker.
Is it a cracker.
Sharp cheddar?
A sharp cheddar would be good.
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, the older you get, you can basically gauge your age by your taste in cheese, don't you think? Right? I mean, when you're a kid, it's a Kraft American single.
Yeah.
Individually wrapped, and that's it. That is cheese when you're a kid. Either that or it's a Goldfish, right? Cheese-flavored Goldfish. Something like that. Not so much when you get older. But nacho cheese is a pretty close one, actually. 52.5 to 47.5. A nacho cheese Doritos come out on top. Cheese curls. What the hell is a cheese curl?
Is that a Cheeto?
No, because cheese puffs are its competition.
Well,
a puff or a curl?
I mean, a Cheeto is a cheese puff, right? This is the 2-7 matchup.
Well, the puffs, I assume, would be the big puffs.
Yes. Like a Cheeto, Chester cheese.
Well, no, not that. That's a Cheeto, like the cheese puffs, the really puffy.
Oh, the round things?
Yeah.
Oh, those are stupid.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like those,
See, I'm confused on what I'm voting for here.
Then I'll go with the puffs because I know what it is.
Puffs won over cheese curls in a close one, 52 to 48. Which snack is better for Super Bowl? The voting is ongoing, by the way. You can go to deadspin.com or you can go to foodspin.com, which is a spinoff of it. Sour cream and cheddar chips. I guess it's because it has cheddar in it.
Yeah, because they had the Doritos in there,
too. Versus cheese popcorn.
Oh, You kidding me? Give me the chips all day.
Yeah, you got to chips over popcorn at a Super Bowl.
And I like that sour cream and chips.
If I just was going to eat one, like a watch a movie and eat a bowl of something, I choose cheese popcorn all day over
the
sour cream and cheddar chips. I don't really need the flavored chips. Cool Ranch is about the only flavored chip. I'm a pretty plain chip eater. Cheez-Its versus Goldfish.
Ooh.
What is this, a party for a two-year-old?
I don't know,
it's
but those
Cheez-Its.
Those are both fantastic. I'd probably go with the Goldfish.
We had this conversation off the air yesterday.
I don't know why you think that's only a kid snack.
It is a kid snack, and in a pinch, I'll eat a couple because they're not hideous tasting, but they're just like a little puff of air.
But they're so good.
Crispy
good,
outside. Man. I don't know. All right, here we go now to the nuts and such division.
The Asuntries division.
Number one versus number eight seed, peanuts versus wasabi peas.
Peanuts.
Are you kidding me? Give me a handful of those peas. I don't care if they're dipped in gold. All right? Peas. I'm going to eat a handful of peas. Those wasabi peas,
no,
man.
Thank you.
No, whatsoever. Is that what it takes to get people to eat their vegetables in Japan? Wasabi? Covered peas? I don't know.
They're pretty good, but
peanuts crush.
They're not better than peanuts.
Peanuts, 78-22%. Pretzels versus, I hope I'm saying this right, crudites?
Pretzels.
What's a crudite, Tony?
I don't know.
I don't either. I'm with you. Pretzels, one of the all-time snack things. Chex Mix versus, I guess this is like the, they're all lumped together. Fiddle Faddle, Kettle Corn, Crunch and Munch. Any of those, like a Cracker Jack kind of thing versus Chex Mix.
I think crudite's another name for like a vegetable tray.
Yeah.
I was
looking it up.
Oh, vegetable trays are delicious.
So what were those up against again?
Except if they have peas. Chex Mix versus Fiddle Faddle, basically. Or whatever your favorite variety of near Fiddle Faddle is.
I would probably go Fiddle Faddle.
See, to me, that's too much. How's that any different than popcorn?
It is to me.
I would prefer popcorn, though, right?
I don't really like Chex Mix.
That's all right. A Chex Mix is one of those things, like you start with a bowl of Chex Mix at a bar, like if they give you the bowl of Chex Mix, and you eat them, but like all the pretzels go first.
Yep.
Right? And then the little, what do you call them? The little Chex themselves.
Chex,
will
yeah.
go. The peanuts, you know, and they all go in an order. And then you end up with like those brown quarter sized slivers of rock.
Whatever it is.
I don't know what that is. If you had told me that was a crudite, I would have believed it. Finally, mixed nuts versus pork rinds.
Mixed nuts.
See, I would, in a vacuum, yes. But if I already got the peanuts, give me the pork rinds here. Give me something different.
Yeah, but I'm making a choice of one snack.
I'm with you. I get it. It's a head-to-head battle. So not too many upsets there. But the Kettle Chips did win as a sixth seed in the potato division. Voting continues today as they march
but
along.
You can't have just one Lay's.
That's what they say. Is it Lay's? Yeah, Lay's you can't have. What about Pringles? Didn't Pringles have something
once you pop,
like that?
Can't stop.
Yeah,
that was
like
Pringles.
That. They get right in your head, don't they? Are you throwing a Super Bowl party this year?
I think I may be. I'm not sure if I'm going to be throwing one or going to one, but I'll be among
throwing
friends.
Or going. Yeah. Are you a thrower or a goer? That reminds me of something else, but I won't bring it up. Finally, Tony, fan feedback spotlight.
Yeah.
We asked people who is the next Jag to get into the Pro Bowl.
We got a ton of reaction from at Irish Jaguar. None, they'll all be playing in the Super Bowl. Sweet. From LB, Lauren Brooks chiming in. She says Aaron Colvin for sure. She'll be joining us in Arizona next week, late in the week. Hadari said Leonard Williams from Tony Agolini, Josh Scobie from Bry. We got Gus Bradley going to coach this team to the playoffs. So I guess he's not worried about it. Ronald said, I'd say Cyprian, hashtag breakout year, from Ovaro at JustBlack81. His pick is Justin Blackman from Nick. Denard Robinson, 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns. Hashtag D-Rob, hashtag get D-Rob the ball. From Morning Hardwood, we got Aaron Colvin for sure. Watched every career snap at Oklahoma, two-time Big 12 first team. Hashtag Boomer Sooner. He sounds like a Oklahoma fan from
yes.
Cam. I don't think he's on the roster yet, but I would say Puzz if he comes back to form after his injury. From Duval Doom, it's got to be Marquise, but only if they fix the line. He's open every other play. From Eric, I'd like to see Cyprian there finally, but not sure if he will make the jump. Maybe Colvin? From Quentin, Big Sin, Aaron Colvin, and hopefully Randall Cobb. From Joshua, Cobb, Coleman, McCourty. And from Matt, we got Telvin Smith. From Jason, Devin McCourty. So they're filling up the free agent
wish
list.
That's fine. You know, I think Stevie, Irish Jaguar, had it best. He said none because they're going to the Super Bowl next year, and therefore we won't be playing in the Pro Bowl. That's the one we're all striving for. By the way, Brock Foster says that the Parmesan goldfish are the fire. Okay. He's a fan of that. Actually, he threw up six flame emoticons.
Parmesan
or emojis.
Goldfish are good.
I've never had the Parmesan ones. I trust you, though. Look, they're fine. I'm just saying we got to go either or here. Mike Kayakfish says, remember when I suggested cheeses for your top five list a while back? You scoffed. How handy would that be now?
Cheeses?
Yeah. Really? Really? Top five cheeses? Really? Top five cheese? Although, you know what's good? Hmm. The horseradish cheddar that you can get at Publix in the deli.
Haven't had it.
That's the fire,
baby.
Although
I really love cheddar and I really like horse.
Oh, don't so good. So good. You know what? I figured out instead of getting things so sliced so thin and putting two slices, I just started asking them for, give me one nice thick slice of that horseradish cheddar right there. What else did we get? Jags Press Box, who said earlier, we are all in on Greg Olson. And then he clarified he was talking about he and his 10-year-old son. Because I'm like, who is this we that you deem yourself worthy of speaking for? He said, put the lime in the coconut. All right. And then Brother Jason at JB Maidstrong tweeted me a picture of something called cheese curls. And they just look like Cheetos is what they look like. Cheese curls. He said, I guess they're just generic puffs. I don't know. I was confused. They should have had pictures to help me out with on that snack list. Which one of these looks better to eat? I don't need anything getting a bunch of cheese dust on my hand at a Super Bowl party or any party where I'm drinking alcohol. I don't need the cheese dust coming off of my
fingers.
I was
going to say that was the cheese category, though.
I understand, but that's why I'd rather go with the cheese and crackers.
Right.
You know, I'm a fan of the cheese and cracker tray. That's good. Or the little squares of cheese. Who cuts all those little squares?
I don't know.
By the way, that's
whoever's
a task.
Hosting.
It's a hell of a task. I think you'd probably buy them like that. I don't know. Well, I'll have to see. You know.
Not if you want the good cheese.
I'll find out, you know, after the Super Bowl what you had at your Super Bowl party because I won't get an invite. That's how that whole thing goes. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks to Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union. Tyler, if you've got an important message, you better just tell me because I can't check squat on this computer.
You don't have a good computer, I take it.
I do not. Do I? Is it something that is that I need to speak on the air at this moment?
Yeah, just a quick note. The Jaguars will keep George Yarno under contract so he keeps his salary and benefits.
Good for him. That's a nice gesture. And if he ever works his way back, they'll make it work somehow or other. I think certainly he is a much respected guy in this organization.